On this episode of DC On Screen, we have an exclusive interview with the Suicide Squad actor and SNL cast member Pete Davidson, thoughts on the latest trailer for The Batman, thoughts on that movie's rating and runtime, plus thoughts and news on Peacemaker, news of David Ramsey's John Diggle-led series Just As You as well, all that and so much more after these messages from our mystery sponsors. Welcome into DC On Screen, the podcast where we discuss the DC multiverse properties on film and television and embrace the diversity of the multiverse while respecting all creative visions involved, even if it ain't quite our bag. I'm David C. Robertson, and this, the man who once catapulted a demonically possessed cat into a field full of ravenous wolverines, Jason Goss.
Bet that little girl was okay afterward.
She was.
Went back to her family.
She was. She was eating chicken noodle soup by the end of the night.
Mm-hmm. Night before, arsenic.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if anyone out there knows that about, you know, the demonically possessed, but after the demons have been expelled, they eat chicken noodle soup.
Mm-hmm. Immediately.
And I don't know why she was possessed, if the cat was possessed.
And no one ever makes it. It's like one of the angels that comes and helps with the possession. It's like that's their little calling card. They leave a little bowl of chicken soup ready to go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Little cherubim soup.
A cherub of soup?
Cherubim soup.
Oh, cherubim soup. It's like, did they make the bowl out of the skull of a cherub?
Oh.
Thank you so much to our patrons. $1 a month gets you every episode without the pesky little ads we have on here. $5 a month gets you that plus access to exclusive content when we are able to create it. Speaking of that, we've really got to get to that Ghostbusters 2 and Ghostbusters Afterlife review.
Mm-hmm. Mitchin.
Oh, we haven't even been able to do this show. We've been so busy.
Yeah, and sick.
Well, you've been sick. Yeah.
And like busy.
That was the real knuckle at the base of our spine there.
Mm-hmm.
Was that you've been sick and the family's been sick.
Yeah, we've just been passing stuff around.
Mm-hmm.
And or mm-hmm. falling down and getting our first stitches, little girl.
Oh.
Yeah. Gotta happen thing. Sometime. I put a wooden stick through my lip around the same age.
Yeah. There's a...
Are there not wooden sticks that I should... Anyway, that seemed redundant when I said it.
Yeah. It crossed my mind and I was like, no, let it pass, Dave.
You know, all those aluminum sticks that I avoided to get to the wooden one.
Clearly, the wooden one will be more safe. Ow!
Yeah. Glad I didn't fall on a rock stick.
There's an amount of contention in my family, and has been for years, because when my sister and brother-in-law had their first kid, my brother-in-law's my mom would be like, are you just going to let him hurt himself? Why aren't you watching him? And my brother-in-law's response was, he's got to learn somehow. Kids turned out fine. I don't.
They did all right.
They did all right.
That's how I was taught to swim. Grandfather said, oh, he didn't know, and picked me up and by my shirt and threw me in the deep end.
Oh, God.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. You want to get to the show?
Let's do it.
All right. So first up, several months ago now, just after the release of The Suicide Squad, our good friend, Dr. Steve over at Weird Medicine, good man, patron, reached out to us with an offer to interview the Suicide Squad actor, Pete Davidson. We came up with a ton of questions, and because of his own burgeoning career, Pete took a little while to get back to us. Some of our questions have already been answered, so he didn't need to answer them. Like, I think I asked him if he was coming back to SNL. Well, he's there, so.
Yeah.
And then there were others that I suspect he couldn't answer for professional NDA reasons. So I'll leave those in the dark there. I'm not going to tell you what those were, but
even Pete, that would be information.
Yeah. Thank you so much for answering what you did. We did send the questions via email, and we were sent the audio to his responses. So for the sake of the listening audience, we will be asking our questions and editing his audio in. Full disclosure, I don't want to make it seem like he's right here in the studio with us or anything. I don't, you know.
Which would have been weird with the audio quality difference.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, we're not in the same place, you and I.
No, so. Not even I. Yeah. Like, we can't even get in the same room.
We've been in the same room like four or five times on the show.
Yeah. Once in a car.
We did do one in a car with Scott from DC Squadcast.
We did. And Chris White.
All right. And Chris White, yes. Beloved Chris White. All right, so let's say you you start us off with the first question. I'll hit the two in the middle, and you hit the one on the end because it just you wrote it, and I feel like it's you.
Oh, that sounds that sounds.
I think actually, I think all of these are yours for real though. Like these were all your questions.
I couldn't tell who wrote what either. I don't think so though.
Oh no, I think all of these were.
Oh, well, cool. I could not remember. It was months. Well, I'll begin with the first then. Were you sad you didn't get to sport Blackguard's glorious purplish ponytail from the comics version?
When I first saw that I was playing Blackguard, I, you know, Googled, like, who the fuck is Blackguard? And then I saw this, like, insane costume with, like, a purple ponytail. So I was like, this is going to be ridiculous. And then I got the set, and it was such a cool outfit. And I was, like, relieved, but also just, like, I guess it would have been really funny to have that insane ponytail, but I was just like, just so happy to be a part of it.
Were you offered the role of Blackguard or did you have to audition? If so, what was that process like?
The role of Blackguard, I got a call from James Gunn and Peter Safran, the producer, and they were like, they just read this part and, you know, without spoiling stuff, even though it's been out for a little bit. They were just like, you know, this is what happened. It's kind of the start of the film, and we think it's a great role. And I was thinking like, oh, okay, so when do I have to read or, you know, what's going on? And they were like, no, it's yours. And then I freaked out and called every single person I knew.
Was your death scene done with practical effects?
My death scene was done with effects. I mean, like, I don't know. Pretty much there was a stunt body that they made. Where they blew the face hole, and then they like just left that on the ground. But everything was done in post. But when I saw it for the first time, I was like, holy shit.
Is Nathan Fillion a cool guy? I always felt like he was. Are we wrong? Prepare me.
Nathan Fillion is the coolest, nicest guy ever. Like, there are no words to describe how nice of a guy he's just so cool. He lets me do his show, The Rookie, with him. We keep in touch, and he's just like, he's just so sweet. There's not a bad word I could say about that guy.
All right. And once again, thank you, Pete, for taking the time to answer those questions. I know you're a busy dude, and I hope you guys enjoyed our little exclusive interview with Pete Davidson. You want to talk about some news now?
Some fun answers in there. That was good.
Yeah, I liked them. They were good.
And it was good to not have my heart broken.
Yeah, Nathan Fillion is a good guy.
Who'd have thought?
Like. Not me. The more I like an actor now, these days.
You're sure he is to defy you?
Mm. Yeah.
Go rogue. Like, we'll have more of that later.
A little bit more.
We'll keep it brief on that, yeah.
Yeah, brief.
It will be addressed.
It will be addressed. All right, so you saw this Bat and Cat trailer for the Batman, right? I have to say, you know, look, I've been totally on board this Robert Pattinson Batman film. And I'm still down. I did not like this trailer.
That's fine. I'd bet half the stuff you didn't like in it, by the time you see it, you'll actually enjoy it.
Well, you know, we don't know how much of this is going to go away because trailers have a habit of getting rid of things that are in them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are just a couple of, like, for one thing, I've got really three issues, and those issues are as such. One, this trailer feels completely different in tone to the other trailers and all of the marketing so far. So to me, it feels like, you know, they're giving us a little bit more, but it's like, is this movie what we've been sold so far? It really took me off guard.
In all fairness, it's still the same movie.
Mm-hmm.
So
it is.
You have not been sold a false bill.
But I just, maybe.
I think it's more of a, like, you can put a few moments together and make something feel entirely different.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't substantially change. I love the comedies being turned into horror trailers.
Yeah. Like, yeah, those are fun.
I mean, you're just throwing some extra music and pick a couple of specific shots, and man, you got it.
Mm-hmm. Now, look, man, I'll be the first to admit, I did not like the second Batman v Superman trailer. That is still my favorite superhero movie, I think.
I don't remember specifically the trailer, but I do remember agreeing with you about that. Mm-hmm. That it wasn't the most inspiring thing, but there seems to be a sophomore slump with second trailers in general.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you're overly scrutinizing an area like we do.
Yeah, and I wasn't trying to over-scrutinize it by any stretch. I was just like, oh, cool, new trailer released. And then I was sort of just like, oh, okay.
Yeah, but if it was like a, you know, rom-com, we wouldn't be diagnosing the shit out of the second trailer and comparing it to the first. And
maybe you wouldn't.
Yeah, sure.
Now, the other two issues are humor issues. I generally love humor in movies.
Especially comedy.
Yeah. But here, there's a scene, there's a line where Pattinson looks down at a bunch of cats and in Selena's apartment and goes, "That's a lot of cats." And
yeah.
And she says she has a thing for strays. And it was just like, ugh.
Oh, y'all. Oh, y'all.
Worthy.
I know. I think it'll either maybe be edited differently or present differently at the time. I don't think it'll come across that way, but who knows?
Because I do think it would be like stronger if he just like looked down at the cats and then looked back up at her like, what the hell, without saying anything. Like, yeah, Bruce, we know. It's a lot of cats. And then she could say, I have a thing for strays.
Yeah.
And then there was a bit about...
You love how when they do that in movies, somebody has like 12 cats and there's not a litter box in sight.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of what's the reality of it, where there's just a living room full of, you know, litter boxes.
Not just that, litter.
Yeah.
The cats will get the litter in their toes and drag it all over the place. It's terrible.
That's a bit of movie magic though. I'll keep.
Yeah. And then there's the bit where she says, in referring to, you know, her life, honey, I got 9 of them. It felt a little weird. It was just, is this what we're doing now? Is this just going to...
We are doing cat puns after all. Okay, gotcha.
I really hope that that's... Just cut those. This is fine. If we're doing 7, let's do 7.
Right before the last edit, just sit him down and watch the Arnold Mr. Freeze.
Yeah.
And say, I just want you to... Just let me show you a little bit of just a 4-minute clip on YouTube and then go make your final edit of the movie.
But you know what? I'm down. Let's see it. I'm not going to say I'm again it until I see it in context. I hate when people see things out of context and judge a movie based on that. So we're going to move on.
Yeah. I mean, that's only the stuff he didn't like. I mean, the rest of it just looked like, you know, the same cool shots I was looking forward to. And
yeah,
the Colin Farrell penguin that might actually somehow be better than the Robin Lord Taylor.
It's maybe
a weird comparison. I'm just saying that's currently my favorite penguin I've ever seen on any live action.
Mine is still Burgess Meredith.
I get it, but that's very different tone.
It is. But I do maintain Burgess Meredith would still fit in. Like, I think he would. And I know I'm just like, oh, I don't like those jokes that were in that trailer. You know who'd be great in a modern day retelling? Burgess Meredith.
Right.
Which, to be fair, if you've seen the Rocky movies, that dude could really do. He could really do drama for real.
Yeah, like, he'd be fine. Between that and
the Twilight Zone, like, you know, he was camping it up over on 66.
Oh, he was having a great time. I mean, you know, it's got to be fun when somebody finally just tells you, hey, dude, let's do the silliest thing you can think of right now.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we've got Zoe Kravitz calling the movie an origin story for Catwoman. She was talking to Empire. She says, this is an origin story for Selena, so it's the beginning of her figuring out who she is beyond just someone trying to survive. I think there's a lot of space to grow, and I think we are watching her become what I'm sure will be the femme fatale. I obviously understand the gravity of a character like this and what she means to so many people, but what felt really important was to really focus on the story that we're telling in this moment. And try to create a real human being. That was that last bit was from the fandom, actually. And I just put that right in there again. So
yeah.
Anyway, I figured it was going to be some sort of origin for Selena. I didn't, you know, they've spoken at length about how this is not going to be all of these characters and their fully fleshed out, you know, final evolution or whatever, to use a Pokemon term.
No, I expected
their final form.
Yeah, I we're not really seeing these characters called things yet. I just figured it was the first time a lot of them would, you know, meet and sort kind of start galvanizing each other into what they'd become, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Now, I really enjoyed this. Matt Reeves was talking to Empire Magazine and said that the Batmobile was inspired by Stephen King. He says it has to make an appearance out of the shadows to intimidate. So I thought of it almost like Christine. I like the idea of the car itself as a horror figure making an animalistic appearance to really scare the hell out of the people Batman's pursuing. And I definitely got that out of the trailers.
Is that one the one with the killer car? Because yeah, okay,
that's the one.
I know it better from the Futurama episode.
Mm-hmm. You would.
Yeah, but I do like the concept.
Yep, I do too. Now, in that Empire magazine, Zoe Kravitz, Colin Farrell, and Paul Dano were talking about their characters of Catwoman, Penguin, and Riddler. And Kravitz said, "I really wanted to dive into who she is as a human being. There's a great moment where you see she has all these tons of cats, and I really wanted to dive into the psychology of that. Why does she have all these cats? And when you see the film, you'll see it's completely connected to who she is as a human being. Oftentimes, when an actor wants a part, we tend to just nod and smile and say yes to everything. But I tried to do something a little different, for me anyway, which was to treat it as though I already had the part and give notes so Matt could really get a sense of what it was like to work with me." Colin Farrell of who's playing Penguin, says he was compared to the Fredo Corleone from the Godfather trilogy. And apparently there was a modicum of inspiration there with Matt Reeves, because he said something very similar earlier this week. But Farrell says there is a fracture at the core of Oz, which fuels his desire and ambition to rise within this criminal cabal. Where that rise goes, I would love to get to explore in the second film, if that was ever to happen. He's real quick to say that part.
Yeah, yeah. He's going to chime in with that. But it's kind of funny how it was a strange casting that we didn't see coming and just turned into this whole beast that I wasn't expecting.
Mm-hmm. He does say...
He's really excited about this role in a way I wasn't prepared for.
Yeah, he does say there's no top hat.
Yeah, that's good. That belongs in the spaces that it's already been used.
He says, there is one scene where I have an umbrella in my hand, but it doesn't have a trigger on the handle. He does have a limping gait, so there is somewhat of a waddle there. But Oz is not yet fully inhabiting the mythology of the Penguin and doesn't take too kindly to the moniker. This is actually sounding a lot like Robin Lord Taylor's Penguin, honestly.
It is. It is. And I'm there for it.
Yeah, I'm down. Let's see what happens. He'll be getting his own Penguin show, too. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, that's when I really thought, I don't know, that's when it really struck me that this had spiraled into something no one was ready for. But I'm there.
Yep. And talking about the Riddler and being inspired by the Zodiac Killer to some degree, Paul Dano said, I was surprised by it and frankly thought it was better than it had any right to be. he said of... the reboot. He says, as well as making contact with the universe, the archetype, the world, the fans, Matt's delivering something that comes from a real place of gut and heart and psychology. I feel like I kind of wish he had said a little more about his character, but I guess he wants to keep that quiet.
That tracks.
Mm-hmm.
What if we rearrange all the letters and what he said?
I'm too tired for that.
I don't think I have those problem solving skills at this point in my week.
I actually wasn't I wasn't sure. I didn't think I was going to bring this up, but you know, the you remember that Riddler site I talked about a few weeks ago where we were it's basically giving you riddles to solve.
I kind of wanted to visit, but I forgot to.
Yeah, some people wound up getting into the inspection, started inspecting the site and digging through code, trying to find out what the answers are. And what they do find is a message from the Riddler saying, what you're looking for is not here.
Well played.
So I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
So
I recently heard about a virus. When you looked into it, it had a little code that said, please don't delete me.
It's such a polite virus.
It was like, come on, man, please don't. It was so stupid. Like somebody in laser tag. Come on.
Yeah. So we do have a confirmation that the Batman will be showing up on streaming HBO Max on day 46 after it's been released. So the 45-day window is still in effect here, or 46 days.
I don't mind this window too much.
I don't either.
I mean, when I was a kid, it was like the faster you saw it at the like video store on the shelf, you could judge the sales by how quickly you saw it. I mean, if it was there like a month later, I ain't good.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, really good movies, you'd have to wait like 3 fucking months, it feels like.
Yeah. And, you know, well, sometimes. And then other times it was like one of those situations where it was like a movie that was still in theaters and or in our area anyway.
Yeah.
And it was already out on video because it was doing so well that theaters didn't want to get rid of it. And then the company was like, no, we've already promised vendors. So, because we didn't think it would be, I'm sure it was a situation where it was like, they didn't think it was going to be the hit that it was.
Yeah.
So they like had certain vendors lined up to get videotapes. Okay.
Yeah. And then the vendor that, I could see the supply chain. Somebody's just like, oh no, we didn't make enough. Whoopsie. Mm-hmm. And who would have thought it? It's in the markets where people still had the most theater sales.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind 46 days, though, because, you know, I've had a chance to experiment with it with the Marvel stuff right now because I haven't been able to get out for any. And, you know, I only have to turn off my internet for like a month and a half to avoid spoilers. That's not too bad.
Oh, darn.
Mm-hmm.
It is. I've been using Twitter.
Mental health break.
Yeah, I've been using Twitter a lot less lately. I've been a lot happier.
I haven't, I mean, I will probably use it more after Spider-Man, mm-hmm. or after I actually get to see it, but,
yeah, you got to see that.
I know. It hurts so much that I haven't. I finally got caught up on the Eternals and everything, so I had to watch them in order. I mean, can't just go see the one that's really exciting, go back. That blasphemy.
I did.
I know. Heretic.
I never have before, but I did this time and I feel Betrayer. Fine about it. I had someone offering to pay for my ticket.
I know. I would have taken it out too, but.
All right, so we got the Batman has an official rating, PG-13, for strong, violent, and disturbing content, drug content, strong language, and some suggestive material. I don't know about you, but I just feel utter outrage. How dare they make a Batman movie PG-13?
You're right. Should be PG so everyone can see it.
Right.
I want to take my 3-year-old to this movie.
Apparently, there were a lot of people who thought this movie was going to be rated R.
Well, I mean, when you saw the first beatdown trailer, uh-huh. teaser, whatever they wanted to actually call it, like, I could see it.
Uh-huh.
We're flying through, like, explosions, and, I mean, that's all still PG-13. It's about body count and gore when you get to R.
Yeah.
And by boobies and gore.
We also have an official runtime, too, and this one also got everybody's goat.
Mm.
2 hours, 47 minutes without credits.
Yeah.
And, you know.
That is going to be a long sit, yeah.
It is, yeah.
I want intermissions back. God damn it, I want them back.
So, I mean, we're looking at over 3 hours with trailers and credits.
I would have been so much. It would have been the joy if after all this hype, it's been like 3 years, bunch of trailers, and like, runtime, hour 12.
That shit would have been funny.
You've already seen 3% of the movie.
Yeah, you know, I'm fine with a long runtime. You know, it's one of the reasons I'm so excited about streaming, because I'm going to have to take so many piss breaks.
Yeah, yeah.
It's almost like when I finally get it on streaming, I'll be able to catch up on all the shit that I missed while I was streaming. So, you know, it's like a little deleted scenes that I make for myself.
Yeah, I get it. I just love the casual nature of being able to go, I could use a drink, and then just go get one.
Mm-hmm. I need chips.
Yeah. I don't miss the actual theater experience nearly as much as some people. And I mean, you know, practical things. With my job, the phone can ring at literally any hour of any day. I have to get people to cover me to do stuff like watch a movie.
Mm-hmm.
I have to ask for favors. Like, nah.
Mm-hmm.
Stream is a lot better.
There's no way to live.
No way to live.
Yeah. So here's a story. This is for The Flash. Moving on to The Flash. Gal Gadot posted a 2021 recap reel on Instagram, and the July and August entries show her in a makeup chair. And one of them, you could see that she's totally wearing the Wonder Woman outfit underneath her, like the thing that's like their robe or whatever they draped over.
Mm-hmm.
but on the second one, there is a guy wearing a lanyard, or a person wearing a lanyard, with a very distinct logo. And it looks like The Flash.
Yeah. It likely is.
Now, I mean, I guess
somebody on her team put it together, I guess, real quick. And
I get, yeah.
So, and so taken by her beauty, they were, that they missed the spoiler in the background.
Of course. Now, we could be wrong. It could have just been like someone wearing a flash lanyard and who was working on two different films. And it could be her shooting for Shazam.
Either way.
We don't know.
Yeah. The amount of fucks I give about where she ends up is pretty low.
Yeah.
Because I don't have like a heartfelt expectation of the story of those movies, you know, that I'm just going to be disappointed to not see.
Yeah, no. Me either.
And it is even if there was, completely sidetracked by the amount that I just would like to see her again.
Sure. Yeah. The last time I saw her wasn't on the best of terms, so I'd like to see her again and hopefully cleanse the palate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, the potatoes were not great. Let's go back to the steak.
Mm-hmm. Now, also on The Flash, Ben Affleck says, he said to the Herald Sun, "I have never said this. This is hot off the presses, but maybe my favorite scenes in terms of Batman and the interpretation of Batman that I have done were in The Flash movie. I hope they maintain the integrity of what we did because I thought it was great and really interesting, different, but not in a way that is incongruent with the character. Who knows? Maybe they'll decide that it doesn't work. But when I went and did it, it was really fun and really, really satisfying and encouraging. And I thought, wow, I think I have finally figured it out."
Got this role under control.
And then blew up the Snyderverse people with he referred to his time on The Flash and Zack Snyder's Justice League as a really nice finish on my experience with that character.
Going out on top. Look, I like it. You know, we were never supposed to get this far.
Uh-huh.
This is, you know, way beyond the expectations we had 4 years ago.
Yeah.
5 years ago, 6 years ago. I don't know. It's 2019, right?
Yeah. And he's been talking a lot about, he told the Los Angeles Times that making Justice League with Joss was the nadir for him, for me. That was a bad experience because of a confluence of things, my own life, my divorce, being away too much, the competing agendas, and then Zach's personal tragedy and the reshooting. It just was the worst experience. It was awful. But he said playing Batman for his children was worth every moment of suffering on Justice League. Then he was talking to Matt Damon, and Matt Damon was interviewing him for an interview, for a magazine article.
I really like one thing he said there, though. Like,
what's that?
The bit about because it could have been anything. I mean, does it kind of suggest that for all he cares, the movie could have been good or bad?
Mm-hmm.
It could have been the greatest C-beam of all time. Doesn't matter. He had a shit mm-hmm. ride.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
And talking to Matt Damon, though, he once again says, "I had a really nadir experience around Justice League for a lot of different reasons, not blaming anybody. There's a lot of things that happened. But really, what it was is that I wasn't happy. I didn't like being there. I didn't think it was interesting. And then some really shitty things, awful things happened. But that's when I was like, I'm not going to do that anymore. In fact, I talked to you about it." To Matt Damon, mm-hmm. "and you were a principal influence on that decision. I want to do the things that would bring me joy. Then we went and did Last Duel, and I had fun every day on this movie. I wasn't the star. I wasn't likable. I was a villain. I wasn't all the things I thought I was supposed to be when I started out, and yet it was a wonderful experience. And it was all just stuff that came along that I wasn't chasing." That was from he just did a movie with George Clooney, George Clooney being the director. So, yeah.
How many bunch real hardcores are just mad at Matt Damon now?
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
So many people are mad at Matt Damon.
Fuck Will Hunting.
No. Now, this is, I don't know. I'm not going to put a lot of, I don't want to put a lot of weight on this.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't going to mention it, but then Andy Samberg reacted to it.
Ah.
So, So there were scoopers that came out and said The Flash is going to erase Zack's movies. Supergirl will now be the main Superman of Earth. Keaton will be Batman and Batgirl will become the new Batman after her film. And apparently the new plan is for Flash, Supergirl and Shazam to form the new Justice League. And Sandberg wrote, Shazam is going to the Justice League 2022, starting out with some great news. And with like the little gif of Milhouse going, everything's coming up, Batson. I don't put a lot of stock in the scoopers, y'all.
I don't think you should. This one feels like a subreddit has struck again.
Yep. Now the Flash is going to get a movie tie-in though from DC Comics. They just announced it. It's going to be a 3-issue monthly series, which starts in April and concludes in July. And then the entire series is going to be collected in trade paperback in October. It's called The Flash, The Fastest Man Alive. It's going to be written by Kenny Porter with art from Ricardo Lopez Ortiz, Juan Forever, and Jason Howard across the 3 issues. And let's see. Here's the synopsis. Barry Allen's world-saving adventure with the Justice League has driven Central City's favorite son to become a truly skilled and inspirational hero. But when a new threat by the name of Girder emerges in Central City, Barry turns to Batman for advice on training to master his powers. Under the Dark Knight's tutelage, the fastest man alive will have to find a way to defeat this metallic menace or be crushed by Girder's strength. And on the cover is Ezra Miller's Flash in his snazzy new Flash suit from the movie that we've seen already in the little teaser trailer. Mm-hmm. And it's Ben Affleck's Batman.
Nice.
So here are some things, and you and I talked about this briefly off air, but over on Batgirl, there have been all these set photos coming out. And there was a mural that had Batman and what looked like Robin on it. It was definitely Robin, but the Robin was from a 1970s variant 80th anniversary special or something. And the Batman looked like he was from something else too. A lot of people were freaking out talking about this is going to be Keaton's new costume. And that shit didn't happen. There were also some like weird Black Canary signs all over the place. However, now new set pictures of actual Michael Keaton, like one of the, like the promo stills from like one of the old movies is on the mural or on a mural. So I don't know what's going on with that, but I feel compelled because look, none of these things are heavily guarded. I feel like these are all like very intentional releases by Warner Brothers because they're really good shots.
Yeah. It's that new iPhone 13, baby.
Uh-huh. Everyone is kind of freaking out, or a lot of people are freaking out and talking about how this is, you know, an indication that those Justice League, the scoop about, Affleck's going to be completely replaced and none of that shit happened. None of the Snyder stuff happened. This is not an indication that that's true. We just don't know. We don't know what's going on, but also, is if it's a multiverse, then there could be two separate versions of this. To me, you know what it sounds like to me? It sounds like to me that the Justice League is getting retconned.
I was thinking about that yesterday. Honestly, that I don't know. I mean, we were talking yesterday, and after we hung up, I don't know. It occurred to me too, I guess. But yeah, like I don't think anyone's really brought up how much that makes that the case.
Yeah.
It's gone. Like that continuity is a weird sidebar now.
Yeah. Like if they ever actually want to get Zach back to do his movies, he can come back and do his movies. That's why it's a multiverse. Like there's already a branch. There are two branches here. There's Man of Steel, Batman v Superman, Justice League, and Zack Snyder's Justice League.
Yeah,
that's two different realities. So just because Michael Keaton is taken over in one reality doesn't mean that Ben Affleck won't come back at some point for Zach if Warner Brothers lets them. I think that's like the most important thing to remember here. But
yeah, there's very little holding back parts of this, honestly, because.
But then you get stuff like the people from the Flash, the special effects people who did the Flash effects in Zack Snyder's Justice League and who worked with Zack this whole time. They said they were not going to come back until they read Muschietti's script for the Flash.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were like, oh shit, let's do this. Doesn't that just sound like between them and Affleck? Doesn't that just sound like they're doing Zack justice to some degree? Like,
yeah, I mean, It's amazing how many people are on board. It's like there's this vacuum of the word black hole, more like just mm-hmm. the WB people who could actually pull the trigger who aren't on board. And then still they're letting people sneak things in to kind of, you know, pick a side, I guess, and further the story.
Yeah. And even Patty Jenkins has commented and said stuff about, we're going with Zach's version.
Yeah.
Okay. Like literally everybody is like going with Zach's version and not Justice League.
Yeah.
Did you see Batgirl's new outfit? Did you see the costume?
No, I've avoided a lot of the internet and I have the word set pics blocked on Twitter.
Oh no, this isn't a set pic, buddy.
Oh, okay. Then no, I just
they officially
then I just haven't seen it the old fashioned way.
Well, I mean, you have seen it. It's just Batgirl and Burnside. It is exactly that outfit. I think it looks fantastic.
All right.
Yeah. Because they knew they were shooting it, because they are set pics of it now, but they knew it, so they were just like, "Nah, let's go ahead and release it officially."
Get it out there, get a decent shot of it.
Yeah, I think it looks great. Yeah, I'm excited for it. I like Batgirl Burnside. Of course, I like Barbara Gordon anyway. So
yeah, I'm down. I do like that approach of like, just go ahead and give them a decent. Throw it out there before it's some fucking 16-bit pixel version of it that everyone hates and doesn't see the movie, gives up on the whole thing because they don't, and it'll happen.
Yeah, you know, you get plenty of people already going, it looks like CW, it looks like a biker jacket. I'm like, shut up, you look at Burnside, looks fine.
Go read source material, bastard.
Especially if, like, she's not a billionaire. She's, she's, you know, whatever middle class, I guess, would be Commissioner Gordon's income. Like, if she's still living with him, who knows? She seems young.
Shit. I mean, we're middle class and I couldn't get that shit together.
No.
I have to take a loan.
Yeah. So anyway, then there were some set pics, and I'm mostly talking about this to make fun of the fact that this was supposedly news. They were saw headlines all over, new set pictures of Brendan Fraser's Firefly. And I clicked on it. I was like, let's see what this is. He's wearing a coat. He's just a guy.
Oh, no, I saw that. Yeah.
He's just a guy on the street corner.
I was confused too.
I was like, hey, it's just a, we've seen Brendan Fraser.
New pictures of Brendan Fraser being a human.
he's wearing a parka. So he's like, what is that, Gore-Tex?
It's just not revolutionary. Get back to me when he's burning something down, internet.
Yeah. Over to Black Adam.
Till then, fuck right off.
They were basically, Black Adam producer Hiram Garcia has confirmed with Collider that they are planning more movies after Black Adam. 100%. We have always had a vision of where we wanted this to go. We've never viewed this as just a one-off movie. I'm such a gigantic comic book nerd and fan. I love this universe so much. If you can tell from my excitement about talking about all these things, I've always gotten into this with a vision of this is the story we want to tell. This is where we would love to go. We would love to see this go. This is how we would see multiple pictures play out, possibly including spinoffs for individual characters. But there's always been a rough kind of loose outline in our head on an imaginary whiteboard of how we'd want to do it. As we're making that, we start to look at that a little bit more. But again, ultimately, we need the movie to be received well, and we want fans to like it. But there's 100% a vision of what we'd like to be doing in the multiple picture aspect when it comes to Black Adam and the Justice Society of America.
That makes me happy.
All right. And not that this is really that big of a news, but Aquaman, The Lost Kingdom, that's wrapped. Filming is wrapped.
She done.
She good.
Stop getting all that body paint every day. Just have some of the natural body paint that remains.
Oh, yeah. Gal Gadot told InStyle that Wonder Woman 3 will probably start filming a year and a half or so.
All right.
So that's, you know, that's about right, I guess. I know they're working on the script, and Patty's got shit to do and Gal's got shit to do. So they all busy.
People got shit to do.
The kid that's playing Blue Beetle says that he has done 2 suit fittings and they're hoping that he gets more buff by the time they start filming.
you could just put that in the contract if you want to.
Yeah, I mean, you could.
Kind of your contract. There are ways to make this happen.
Someone had tweeted out to James Gunn that they hoped the Suicide Squad was going to be a bigger success than it was box office wise on HBO Max. And Gunn tweeted, "Thank you, but the Suicide Squad is already the biggest DC project ever on streaming in HBO Max." So there's that. Made several people angry.
I mean, if the numbers are there, what are you going to do?
I mean, what are you going to do?
It's just not a...
I agree. Not that we have seen the numbers for Zack Snyder's Justice League in the U.S. We don't know.
I don't know for sure either. I'm just... he could be full of shit, but...
He could be.
I assume he wouldn't say something so daring without at least some leg to stand on.
And if we know James, it'll be the third... But... If we know James, it'll be that third leg.
Yeah.
Because he likes the penis jokes.
He's a dirty bastard.
That just reminds me of, what was it, like season one of South Park where Kenny's drinking gasoline and the old guy's like, "Oh, you see that, boys? Now that is a dirty bastard."
It sounds familiar. It's been a while, but it rings a bell.
So here's a thing that I was really a fan of. So someone took a screenshot of a tweet that James Gunn had liked. And basically the person was first half of the tweet, they were praising Pete Davidson. Second half of the tweet, they were shitting on David Ayer.
All right.
And James Gunn liked it. And then someone took a screenshot of that and wrote, "This is why I dislike James Gunn." And James Gunn responded and he said, "Let's be clear. Pete was getting tons of hate online, and I read the first phrase and liked the tweet. Someone pointed out what it all said, and I immediately unliked it and talked to and apologized to David about it privately so it wouldn't turn into a big to-do and embarrass him or me or Pete. But for seemingly their own purposes, this is what some like to amplify. One hair trigger like, despite me immediately unliking it and the dozens of times I have publicly stated how much I respect David, his talent, and his movies. David couldn't have cared less about it, by the way, because he's cool. Though I try not to be liking things without reading them all the way through, I still sometimes F up. Finally, Pete Davidson really is an incredibly sweet guy and amazingly talented, and I'll always stick up for him." Then Ayer quote tweeted Gunn's reply saying, "Wait, what? Is drama still a thing on the internet? I thought 2022 would be different. James, you so got this. I'm going back to sleep now. Oh, and by the way, Peacemaker is dope."
Yeah.
And I don't think I...
And thus the beef was squashed.
Yeah. I think there was some other thing where like, James mentioned like, we're using Zach's like choreographer or something. Zach recommended him to me because we're friends.
Because, you know, we're good.
And of course, you know, there's the shit about like, oh, well, it's just one sided. Zach hasn't watched Peacemaker. He's not going to watch that bullshit. I'm like, yeah, no, he probably hasn't watched it because he's about to film Rebel Moon, Jack Wagons.
Right.
The man's busy.
Yeah.
They're not just sitting around in someone's basement jerking off and watching shit to piss on all day.
Well, yeah, and they're busy with their own creative stuff. And you don't, it's not like they all call each other. There's not an actual secret club or a meeting or something like, or like a group chat where they go, they say like, "Hey, you know, mine's out. Have you seen mine yet, Gunn?" No, they're all busy. And especially if you work in the same arena, you know, you understand the instinct? Like, I saw Kevin Smith point this out one day and thought it made a ton of sense to me. Like, if you're in create mode, you don't want to watch other people's stuff because you'll start like siphoning ideas from other people. Like, if you're in create mode, you want to do your own thing and try to stay out of that other people's things. And then,
yeah, that's a real thing.
Yeah. I mean, I get it.
So here was an interesting quote from Greg Silverman, a former Warner Brothers executive who was working for Warner Brothers at the time of all the Zack Snyder stuff. Someone had tweeted, "If someone other than Zack Snyder had directed Man of Steel and Batman v Superman, with the movies being exactly the same, these movies would have been critically acclaimed." And Greg Silverman wrote, "My suspicion," he tweeted it and said, "My suspicion always was that Zack's kindness and openness and enthusiasm created an environment for critics to undervalue his work because he is a decent, approachable, humble human. He didn't fit the mold of an auteur. Shitty. It should be the opposite."
Yeah.
Like, wow, man.
This man is just too amiable. We must destroy him.
Yeah. Now, on the other
end of that... What's that? He let the people on site give him notes?
Uh-huh.
Tragedy.
Speaking of someone who doesn't take notes...
A reference was made earlier.
Yes. Joss Whedon.
Yay.
Joss Whedon. Mr. Whedon, man.
Man of the century.
Man of the century. Basically, he did an interview with New York Magazine, and man, he calls Ray Fisher a bad actor in
every sense of the word.
In every sense of the word, yeah. And let's see, he said that he's not racist. He didn't cut Ray's shit because Ray's black. He's not racist. He cut him because he's a bad actor.
Yeah.
And the story didn't make sense. And I'm wondering, did Joss Whedon, does he know that we have Zack Snyder's Justice League? Because I watched all 4 hours and I thought the story made perfect sense and Ray was phenomenal. So that's not going over well.
It very much is someone, you know, pulling the curtain down and showing all the smoke and mirrors. Like, you just can't hide behind that lie anymore.
Yeah. And he said that Gal Gadot, he didn't threaten her. She doesn't understand English. English is her first language,
the
he
most
says.
Condescending fucking...
And Gadot even
what
like
amazes
responded
me
to
is that I don't think he came up with that off the top of his head. I think someone discussed that with... Conversations were had about how to handle it.
Yeah.
And that's what they settled on.
Yeah. It's bad. It looks bad.
It would have been better if he just said something around that was said. I remember a conversation, but I don't... That wasn't what I was trying to say, and I think we had a misunderstanding. That would have been a way, way better answer than like, fucking poor immigrant lady. She just didn't understand what I was saying, because I understand the English language pretty fucking well, because, you know, Shakespeare. And
He even says, I tend to be annoyingly flowery in my speech.
Yeah. You know.
Bullshit, Joss. You're an asshole.
I grew up on Hamlet, so I just, these poor people just can't quite get me sometimes.
This white privilege, it made me speak flowery language.
It makes my head so heavy with the
weight of
responsibility.
The brown people can't understand me.
How will I endure?
And yeah, Gal Gadot actually commented and said, no, I understood perfectly. Yeah. She said that she's, you know, dissuading people from working with him ever.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, man, and Charisma Carpenter came out against him. Like, everybody's coming up. And he even, like, in the article, in the interview, he even says, he refers to it as a malevolent force, you know, and he acts like Zach's, he's like, I don't know who started it, but I know whose name it was done. Therefore implying that Zack Snyder put Ray Fisher up to all this. I don't know, man. What's really funny, though, is that, like, it's not funny, but it's pathetic. But, like, as he's, like, gaslighting and calling all these people wrong and, oh, but it's never happened. Me and Charisma never had all these words, all this shit. He's also been, like, my ex-wife, she wrote a scathing letter, and she said lots of untrue things about me. Except I did the bad things that she said I did. Like, so it was like,
except for the stuff that I did, which was all of it. But
I don't know, man. It's just a horrible, horrible interview, and he just completely he doesn't apologize for anything. He tries to accuse everyone of, you know, misunderstanding, but then admits that he's a piece of shit. So I don't know, man. You can stay canceled, buddy.
Yeah.
I'm done.
It kind of felt like the reporter maybe sat down and said, man, I just want to hear you out. That's all. And apparently they talked for a couple days. And I know it didn't happen because he called later to catch up with the guy and just kind of say, my life's still shit. How you doing? But I just, in my head, it's like they wrapped the interview after 2 days, and he kind of, you know, picks up his notes and his laptop or whatever and says, okay, well, I've heard you out and you're terrible. I'm going to go write an article.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, that's all we've got for movie news. Yeah. So we're going to hit a break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about Peacemaker. We're going to be talking about a little bit of Arrowverse stuff, some HBO Max, a bunch of stuff. So don't nobody go nowhere. All right, Wynn, we are back, and we're going to talk about Peacemaker a little bit. James Gunn said he wants to do another season of Peacemaker. He told he told someone, we have 87 seasons mapped out. We're going to be doing this until John and I are 150 years old. But no, we do want to continue. We really want to continue. It was the greatest group of people. Now, apparently, there's a Peacemaker character who will appear in future DC Comics projects. Or appear in a future DC Comics project.
Someone Gunn is being introduced here. That's what you're
saying. Yeah. Gunn says it is part of the DCU. I mean, they can use these characters. I mean, one of these characters, which people have kind of figured out, one of these characters is used in a future big DC movie that's from here. So we are connected to all of this. Who knows what role these characters are going to play in the future? I mean, no one knew who the Guardians of the Galaxy were, and then all of a sudden, they're massive players in Infinity War and Endgame. So who knows what's going to happen with Peacemaker in 10 years, 5 years, or whatever. So, yeah, I don't know. The speculation that I've seen, and I don't know where it's coming from, I couldn't find the source on it, was that Harcourt was going to be involved in something.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I don't know. That might not be even true. But it looks like somebody is going to be a part of something going forward.
I'm curious. I don't have a good guess yet, really. I mean, I guess some people's guess has been right. He seems to have said as much, but I don't think I know yet.
Which, by the way, I'm loving Peacemaker.
Oh, yeah. It's wonderful.
It's fantastic.
It's one of the things I'm looking forward to most this weekend, honestly, is getting to sit down with that watch again. It.
Yeah. And Gunn confirmed he's working on another DC Comics TV series after Guardians Volume 3. He says, we're stepping forward. It keeps happening. We'll see what's happening, and I'll know what's happening very shortly. I dealt with it last night and this morning. It's TV. There you go.
Well,
he told that to Collider. Yeah.
We know that, at least.
I like James Gunn, though, so, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm down.
Yeah, I'm in. I ain't got to be convinced.
Now, are you watching the opening sequence every time?
Mm-hmm. I really am, with growing interest.
Because Gunn said that he hoped that people stuck around and watched it every time. He says, that was in the script from the beginning. There's a woman by the name of Charissa Barton, who I hired to do the choreography for us. She did a fantastic job. I really wanted just something very, very weird. I remember Leota and Danielle coming to me and going like, what are we doing? What is this? And I'm like, just look totally serious. You're not having fun. Just be very, 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 very serious. And telling Charissa, we've got to make the dance as ridiculous as it could possibly be while they remain completely serious. Charissa really helped me put that together. She was the one that designed it, and she did an amazing job. And, apparently it gets darker and deeper and sadder.
Nice.
takes on more meaning as you progress through the season, which I really dig that idea.
Yeah.
He also like, and I didn't even notice this. This is like the opening sequence of the first episode of Peacemaker, where we're like previously on the Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
Part of that, we saw Flo Crawley, the woman who hit Waller over the head. We see her getting arrested, and that was not in the Suicide Squad.
Oh yeah. Now that you remind me, you're right.
Yeah, and he explained that, you know, that was cut from the Suicide Squad, but we put it back in Peacemaker so to explain that she actually does go to prison, which is why she isn't part of this team.
I mean, not surprised she went to the old big house.
The Hoosegow. I thought you were going to say. The Hoosegow.
The old sandbox. Not true. No one's ever said that.
I've never heard the old sandbox. I've heard Hoosegow and Big House and the old Pooter Poker.
Mm.
I've never heard that, but I liked it.
New one for me.
So I said it. Yeah, I've never heard it. It's I came up with that just now.
The old
the old Pooter Poke.
Yeah, as it's known.
The old Bars and Scars, as they call it.
Right.
Over to Superman and Lois.
Hastily, thank you.
Yes.
Let's leave that.
Yes. They are... David Ramsey is directing... He directed the second episode of this season, by the way.
Yeah.
And Todd Helbing was just talking about the Lane family and how there's going to be a lot of serious tension in there. And did you know that Jenna Dewan is coming back to play Lucy?
I hadn't heard that one, actually.
Yeah, she played Lucy Lane in Supergirl years ago. She was like, you know, you say that, you sound like you don't remember. Do you remember, you don't remember Lucy Lane?
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's been a few seasons. Yeah, I'm caught up.
Yes, yes. All right, so she is coming back, and she's playing a very, very, very different version of Lucy Lane. And, you know, I'm super excited about that. And, you know, before she was all, like, military and, you know, daddy's good girl and shit.
Mm-hmm.
I ain't looking like that now. But they're utilizing Crisis to kind of do, like, a reboot on her character.
Okay.
Which has been hilarious to see some of the Supergirl fans on the interwebs talking about they are doing everything they can to strip the legacy away from Supergirl. Like, oh, y'all.
No, sweetie.
This is what Crisis is. They get rid of the things that didn't work.
I mean, it's neither that simple nor that complex. It's just
it's not. But they just, you know, they could be free. The point is to be free and do what you want to do.
Yeah.
Give somebody a chance to do something different. So anyway, Todd Helbing, sorely missed showrunner of The Flash.
Yeah, he was good.
Well, he's the showrunner on Lois and or Superman and Lois, so we know where the quality went.
We know how this goes now. I see a pattern.
He said there was serious tension for the Lane family in season two, which will dig into the history of the Lane family and reveal why Lois is the way she is. With all of our cast, I think last year we found out the type of stories we can tell with regards to Lois's miscarriage episode. So we wanted to really dive into the history of the Lane family, introduce Lucy, and give the audience an understanding about why Lois is the way she is, why Lane, General Lane, is the way he is, why Lois hadn't talked about Lucy, why General Lane never talked about their mother, and then really fold that into the couple to see how they would deal with a situation like that. And they're going to be taking a different approach to Ella Lane, Lois's mother. When I thought about Lois Lane's character and how her relationship with General Lane has evolved over the first season, it really felt like, you know, you can go two ways when something like that happens to you. You either go the way of Lois. If you're an alpha type, like I can compartmentalize, I can just deal with trauma and move on. And in a lot of ways, that makes a perfect partner for Superman because she's so strong and able to not worry about him every time he goes out to save the world. But then there's the flip side where you feel like you're missing something in your life. And so that is kind of what we explore with Lucy. I'm excited to watch more.
Yeah.
I have enjoyed Superman and Lois thoroughly.
Yeah.
Thoroughly.
I still haven't gotten to finish, but it was good. I mean, what I saw was great.
Wrap it up, man. Finish it.
We'll get there.
Finish it. Yeah. Finish it.
We'll get there. Don't peer pressure me.
He explains that they've rewritten the character, and he says we were able to do that thanks to the blanket of Crisis.
Yeah. The gift that keeps on giving, bro.
Of course. Mm-hmm. It's the best part of Crisis.
Until they do a version you don't like, and then go to hell.
Yeah. Ain't it always the way?
Mm-hmm.
And this is really weird, and I hope it's good. David Ramsey, John Diggle of the Arrowverse.
The Diggs himself.
Uh-huh. Lined up to reprise his Arrow role on Justice U, which is a potential new series that is in development for the CW. It's been quietly in the works for months, apparently. Written by The Vampire Diaries' Michael Narducci and Grey's Anatomy's Zohan Clack. I don't know those guys, but all right.
A hell of a name, though, man.
I know. You don't mess with the Zohan.
If the
script moves forward, Ramsey would also direct the pilot as part of his overall deal with Berlanti Productions. In Justice U, after spending years fighting alongside masked heroes, John Diggle embarks on a new mission to recruit five young metahumans to live undercover as freshmen at a prestigious university. There, he will oversee their education and train them to become the heroes of tomorrow.
Yeah. He's always been good in the mentor role. I like it.
Yeah, I mean, I'd give it a shot. I just like Diggle.
Yeah.
So, Naomi EP Ava DuVernay warns fans not to expect Arrowverse crossovers in season one. She's on her own path. I really think that this is the first part of the Naomiverse, and that people need to be trying to cross. People need to be trying to cross over here. You won't see any crossovers on season one. That's not there. And we do know that they're introducing.
I like it.
Yeah. We do know that they are introducing a new Superman. It's not going to be Tyler Hoechlin.
Okay.
So, I mean, I haven't watched Naomi. I haven't watched the first couple episodes that are out. I'll get to them. I just haven't yet.
Right.
I had a little Matrix to catch up on.
Right.
Before they shut it off of HBO Max.
Yeah, I know. Hate that there's a time frame for that, but, you know. Mm-hmm. Easy come, easy go.
Mm-hmm. It's come out now that, or it's been announced. It hasn't come out. It's been announced that
it's been really
you know that Bruce Timm, J.J. Abrams, Matt Reeves animated series Batman Caped Crusader.
Mm-hmm.
They have added Ed Brubaker as head writer. This is the guy that wrote. He wrote a bunch of Batman. He wrote Gotham Central. He wrote a bunch of Catwoman. He wrote Catwoman for a while. I believe he did the Bruce Wayne murderer story arc. So yeah, I mean, a lot of people are really excited about this. For me, he's hit or miss, so I was kind of like, okay, well, we'll see.
We'll see what you got. We'll see what you got.
We're a little hit or miss. but he does have that, like, you know, hard-boiled, you know, pulp fiction, film noir type of thing going on. He has that kind of old-school writing.
Yeah. Yeah,
that I do typically like.
I get it.
Here's a weird thing. Supernatural's Jensen Ackles was on Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum and revealed that he currently has his fingers crossed for a role in a secret DC property that is currently in development.
Mm-hmm.
So if you like Jensen Ackles, which I generally don't, you can be excited. I mean, the guy
have a ton of experience with the guy.
He's literally the reason I stopped watching Smallville in season 4. And like the week after I stopped watching it, they killed his character.
I remember. Had I just known. Yeah, I remember.
Had I been doing this show, I probably would have known that he was leaving the show.
Just hang in there. You'll be fine.
But. Yeah. But we're talking, 2004? Something like that.
It was different times.
Different times. Injustice, the animated film, is going to be on HBO Max soon, or now. It is now.
Or it's that. Here it is. Sorry.
Yep, it's there. And to wrap us all up here, we've got a bunch of DC movies that are leaving HBO Max in February. February 28th, we'll see the exit of several prominent DC films from HBO Max. Wonder Woman, Joker, Aquaman, Birds of Prey, Constantine, and the theatrical version of Justice League, the Lego Batman movie, Shazam, Suicide Squad, and Teen Titans Go to the Movies.
Damn, that is gutting, that section.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I own some of those, but still.
Yeah. Now, two Batman movies are heading to Netflix this month, or next month. Batman Begins and The Dark Knight are being added to Netflix on February 1st. And
just not exactly.
There's no indication that the films will be leaving HBO Max. But Batman Begins and The Dark Knight are also going to Hulu at the beginning of February. So I'm guessing they're just throwing that in, and because they're not putting The Dark Knight Rises on there. So I'm guessing they're going to be like, well, you're going to have to go to HBO Max to watch the third one.
Right. You want to see where this goes?
Mm-hmm. So that wraps it up. That's our news, man. That's our news for a month.
Good God.
That was 29 pages.
That did go rather quickly.
It did. I think part of it is, you know, my computer crashed.
Mm-hmm.
I got a new computer. And so on this, I got a Mac. So on the Pages thing, which is their version of like Word, the copy and paste are all out of whack. So like, I don't know, man, my notes basically look like a some kind of like, well, it looks like the Zodiac Killer made them.
Oh,
okay. Just like everything, just big chunks of things are giant font and then other things are tiny.
I actually know the way around that. I need to talk to you about that later.
Yeah, I just haven't had time to mess with it. But yeah, any advice you've got? Because I don't know shit about a Mac. It has been, you know,
a journey.
It's not a coincidence that I just started going to the library every day.
Yeah.
Because they've got PCs there.
Yeah. Can do my work in my natural environment.
I'm like,
Yeah.
Well, that's gonna wrap her, man.
Let's do it. I mean, I'm still sick. I'm surprised I made it this long without ruining a bunch of edits or making a bunch of edits.
Yeah.
The throat held out, well, mostly.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We'd love to start getting this thing out more often. Is that a... Yeah.
Regularly and often. Yeah. There have been some...
Yes.
Waves of illness in our area.
Yeah. We're gonna try to get some FiberCon into the show to get it more regular.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And until next time, keep some DC on your screen.